Hey, we're back on Downtown on this Monday afternoon. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell with you. Our next guest is a special correspondent for Vanity Fair, has written for Rolling Stone, The Wall Street Journal. He's the author of the wonderful book on Rolling Stone founder Jan Wenner. And now he can add record producer to his resume, being the co-producer of a wonderful new collection called Earl's Closet, The Lost Archive of Earl McGrath, 1970 to 1980. You heard one of the songs from the album called Waiting for Me by Little Whisper and the Rumors. We're happy to be joined by, I should add, University of Maine graduate Joe Hagan. Hi there, Joe.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for having me. I love that song you just played, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite from the album. But man, I've been listening to this all weekend, and it is so great. It's such a wonderful dive into everything that, for a guy who grew up in that era, everything that made 70s music great, and it's all new to us.
Yeah, well, it was all new to me when I, you know, found it literally in the closet of Earl McGrath, this kind of legendary figure from that era, and, you know, suddenly decided, wow, I have this untapped little slice of history that needs to be kind of brought out into the world. So that's how this record kind of came to be.
So for anybody who doesn't know, can you give them a little primer on who Earl McGrath was?
Sure. Well, I discovered him when I was writing my book on Jan Wenner in Rolling Stone magazine, and he was this sort of kind of like a jet setter of the 70s. He was an art collector. He was he was married to an Italian princess, and really what he was kind of the host of a very important salon in L.A. and in New York back in the 70s, in which he would bring in all of these different people, whether Mick Jagger or Andy Warhol, you know, socialites and European, you know, aristocrats and all manner of people from different walks of life and kind of mix them together. That was sort of his thing. And at one point, he was given a record label under Atlantic Records by his friend Ahmet Erdogan, who founded Atlantic Records. And he, you know, for a time, and then he was also president of Rolling Stones Records. Mick Jagger hired him to run his own record label. And so he was this sort of unusual figure, but very well known to people who were well known. And that's kind of an unusual thing to say, but that's the kind of guy he was.
So you had interviewed him for your book, and then after he passed away, his widow offered you a chance to look at some photographs that she had taken?
Well, what happened is the widow was, his wife, Camilla, she was also dead, and they had no heirs. They had friends who were sort of managing their estate after their deaths. And Camilla, the wife, had documented their lives for four decades in this incredible photo albums that just, it's like a who's who. You would flip through them and you'd just, you know, there's a famous artist or actor, Harrison Ford or Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, and on it went, and at these private parties that they had thrown. And so I went there to look at those pictures, and I did use some of them in my book, Sticky Fingers. If you were to pick that up, you'd see that Camilla McGrath was the name attached to some of those photos. And while I was in the apartment that they used to live in, I tripped upon this closet full of these tapes. And I asked the woman who was managing this estate, what are these things? And she goes, well, that's the sort of work product from his time at Atlantic Records in the 70s. So I get a step ladder. I step up to the top of the ladder because they were way up high on these shelves. And the first thing I pulled off was a master tape to Some Girls by the Rolling Stones. Literally a studio tape that, you know, was a version of that album that didn't end up coming out, like a different mix. And I was just, you know, I freaked out.
Well, and no wonder when you started rummaging through and found a literal treasure trove here of not just unknown songs, but in some cases, even unknown performers, and some, remarkably, that you weren't even able to track down. I love the version of Where Have All the Flowers Gone by Blood Brothers Six that sounds, I don't know, like this amalgam of the stylistics of the 1970s meeting the L.A. country rock sound, but you couldn't find them anywhere.
That's right. Yeah, there were three tapes I found who I could not track down the artists. There was very little to go on except for what was just scrawled on a box that the tape was in. In this case, it was the Blood Brothers Six. you could tell that it was a Philly soul group. It had that sound. You know, you mentioned the Stylistics or the Delphonics. It had, you know, a falsetto singer with backup singers, and it was a soul kind of groove to it, and it was just, you know, fantastic song. And it was also very primitively recorded, but I just kind of loved the mystery of it. You know, it's like, who is this? It's like, it felt like a little keyhole into time, and you don't know what you're looking at exactly, but you know it sounds good. And so, you know, that was one of the tracks I decided, oh, I got to put this on this project, which I'm going to call Earl's Closet, because that's where all the stuff was from. And, you know, it's been kind of a magical experience, and to not only curate these songs, but to try to write the history of Earl and the artists that I could find on the record. You know, some of them are well-known, Daryl Hall and John Oates. I find their demo tape from 1969, right? released song by the Jim Carroll Band, or, you know, a couple of tapes said New York Dolls on them, right? And they were sort of David Johansen in a rehearsal space trying out some new songs. So you had this real interesting kind of, you know, wonderful slice of time that nobody'd ever tapped into.
And so many different genres covered along the way. The opening track on the album is a song that I knew when it was a country hit for Emmylou Harris back in the day. Yeah. But it's Delbert McClinton and Glenn Clark doing a great version of Delbert's Two More Bottles of Wine.
Yeah, and that's the opening track on the record, and it really kind of defines, you know, what the album is about, really. So, you know, these were all artists who were trying to make it, right? They sent in a demo tape to this guy who had a record label, and they thought, maybe I'll make it. And in the case of Delbert McClinton, he eventually did make it. But what you hear are these, you know, people taking their best shot, and there's a purity to it, right? It's before any producers have come in and cleaned it up. It's just, this is what they were about. And that particular song is a true story, Two More Bottles of Wine. Delbert McClinton told me this in an interview that, you know, he moved to L.A. from Texas in 1971. He wanted to make it in the business. And when he got out there, his wife left him, his wife Maggie, his name checked in the song. And then he had a job in a warehouse. You know, he wasn't really making it. So the lyrics to the song are about, he finds himself sweeping out a warehouse in West L.A. And he's sort of up late, considering his bad fortune, but he has two more bottles of wine, right? As long as he's got two more bottles of wine, he'll be okay. So it's a wonderful little story, and it happens to be true.
And it really sets the tone for the album, because so many of these people, if they had a brush with success, for many of them, it was fleeting at best.
Definitely. And, you know, one of the kind of heartwarming things about it was calling up some of these people, and not all of them were alive, but their families often were, you know, wives or daughters. And they would say, oh, this means so much to us that you found, you know, this music. That in many, almost every case, none of them had these tapes. You know, these were the only left, you know, remnants of their music in some cases. And some of these people were like, wow, you found this, my father or my husband's music, and it means so much to me. Or you found my music, or in some cases, right? And they were really moved by it. It was great to be able to kind of bring it out of obscurity and put it on the map and bring some context to it and kind of feather it into this larger story.
And some very interesting people love the song Christopher by Michael McCarty, who it turns out had a pretty famous stepdad.
That's right. His dad was this B-movie sci-fi director, Ed Wood, right, who was sort of celebrated in a movie of years ago. But who made, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space and these kind of iconic kitsch, you know, horror and sci-fi movies from the 50s. And, of course, that was his stepdad. And it turned out that his stepdad was also a cross-dresser. And he remembers, like, walking around his house and Ed Wood, his stepfather, is wearing a dress. And it was just, you know, strange stories come out of making phone calls to these people. And that was part – I'm a journalist, so I kind of loved calling these people. And I came with two orders of business. One is, we'd like to license this song, right? Because they own the music, right? The tapes are just evidence of the music, and that's great, but you needed to license them. And then on the other side of it, I would interview them. And their stories are in these liner notes that you find in this record, Earl's Closet. And part of the fun for me was writing these liner notes and really telling this tale of this man, his closet, and all these artists inside.
We're talking with Joe Hagan about Earl's Closet, the lost archive of Earl McGrath, 1970 to 1980. It's available now in all formats, but it sounds like, boy, if people really love music, they want to get the vinyl edition that's got all of your liner notes, all the extensive research, and some of those great photographs.
Yeah, the photographs by Camilla are really extraordinary. And if you got interested in such a thing, there's a whole book called Face to Face that was published about a year and a half ago. And it's like a more complete picture table book of all these photographs. And it really is just this marvelous romantic time, you know, where people hung out together in courtyards and had interesting conversations and, you know, romance and sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all the things you associate with that time. And it really is like you're, you know, getting a backstage pass to something that you didn't know existed. This Earl and his wife Camilla were really like alchemists of culture in a way, and bringing people together that might not ordinarily get together. I should point out that Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones gave me a quote for this project, and was quoted in the New York Times recently about Earl, just saying that, you know, he really loved Earl because he had an eye for innovative art, and that he was an amusing companion, that he was somebody that he loved to hang out with. And in fact, if you've anybody out there who's heard the song Shattered by the Rolling Stones, and you know it's sort of about New York during that dirty New York heyday of the late 70s, well, that's exactly the time that Earl McGrath was like his wingman, right? They were hanging out together a lot. And so you can imagine the trouble they got into.
Yeah, and he wasn't particularly successful as a record executive, but what you hear from this album is that he knew talent when he heard it.
Definitely, definitely. And yeah, he was sort of distracted by his social life, which was a very rich one. And he didn't see all of his projects through. But he did, happen to discover Daryl Hall and John Oates. I mean, their career, and they've acknowledged this often, that, you know, they were groping around for a record deal and they weren't getting anywhere. And then they were told to call Earl McGrath. And the next thing you know, they're signed to Atlantic Records. And, you know, the rest is history. And the same goes for the Jim Carroll Band, who Jim Carroll was known as a guy who was a poet and wrote a kind of famous memoir called The Basketball Diaries. And then he formed a band, and Earl heard about it, you know, and became very involved in signing them and bringing them into the world. And that's one of my favorite tracks on the record, too. It's a very rocking, interesting kind of post-punk tune that will really take you right into, you know, late 70s, early 80s New York, and has that real vibe to it.
Yeah, Carrie, can we listen to a little of that? It's the next to last cut, Tension, by the Jim Carroll Band. Let's listen to a little bit of that if we can.
Yeah, yeah. Give me that word, you know.
Now, that song would have a new life later on when he retitled it, right?
That's right. Well, so that the history of that is it was made for his first record, Catholic Boy, which I think came out in 80 or 81. And later, maybe 6 years later, Jim Carroll Band made some soundtrack music for a movie called Tough Turf, which anybody who maybe came of age in the 80s would know, because James Spader was in it. And it was remade as a synthesizer tune with more of a dance vibe to it. And so this was sort of the punk origins of this song. And, Jim Carroll is somebody that I feel like is due for a revival one of these days soon. Not a lot of people may remember him unless you were kind of... The song they do remember is called People Who Died, which was used in some movie soundtracks. But anyway, he was important to Earl's history and kind of a wonderful character in his own right.
And I want to listen to another song that is also one of my favorites from this great album. This is a saxophonist and singer, Norma Jean Bell. She's a Detroit legend, has played with George Clinton and others, but man, what a great song. And it's like so many songs on this album, Joe, that if somebody maybe didn't know music all that well and you said, well, these were all big hits in the 70s, people would say, yeah. Well, of course they were.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she is one of the real, it was such a pleasure to discover that song and then to get to know her. I called her up. She was living in Michigan. She had had a really serious kind of role as a side musician in the 70s. She played with Stevie Wonder. She played with the Mahavishnu Orchestra. She toured with the Spinners. And she was a great saxophone player. That was her main thing. And in fact, for people who go back and listen to that Norma Jean Bell song, and I hope they will, there's some really hot saxophone songs on that record, and those are her. And she was wonderful. So One of the things that really made this record worthwhile for me was discovering somebody like her.
And can you tell me a little bit about the band Country? I love their song Killer.
Yeah. Well, they were the first band that Earl McGrath signed when he ran a label called Clean Records, which only had a couple of artists on it. In fact, Delbert and Glenn and Country. And Country were... the primary guy in the band was named Tom Snow, who went on to very successful career as a songwriter. He'd previously been in a band with Gram Parsons in Boston, of all places. Gram Parsons, of course, of the Flying Burrito Brothers, for people who are interested in country rock. And, you know, that the Country only put out the one record, but it's got some fantastic songs on it. And you can maybe go search around for them on your favorite streaming service. There's some stuff out there, but this track really gives you the vibe. You know, it's like there's a little Neil Young in there, a little bit of the band. There's that. That's the sort of time period we're talking about. And they seem like such a great, credible band and could have gone places. But maybe part of the reason they didn't is that Earl McGrath didn't really, you know how to do it or didn't successfully put them over the top. But they definitely had the talent.
I love the slogan for Clean Records.
That's right. Everybody deserves a clean record. Earl, the man, had an incredible sense of humor, and he was known for this. And he, you know, he was very bemused by it. Nobody was more bemused that he was a record executive than he was, right? I mean, he kind of tripped into the whole thing and really was given this label as a kind of on a lark by Ahmet Erdogan, who really just liked having him around as a social friend, and they traveled together and they partied together and they were, pranksters together. They were just really having fun. And this was in an era when, you know, the record business was a little bit of the Wild West, right? And people just, you might succeed, you might not, but they put out a lot of records. They found people in clubs, and it was a little looser, faster and looser back then, such that a guy named like Earl could even be a record executive, right?
If you haven't read it yet, check out the wonderful piece about Earl's Closet in the New York Times as well. And in that piece, Joe, you refer to this as a core sampler of the 70s. Now that it's out there in the world after a project that has taken you a long time to come to fruition, what's it feel like to have people enjoying and experience this music for the first time?
Oh, man, it is so gratifying because, you know, how did I choose these songs? How did this decide that they were worthwhile? I just was listening with my ears. And so I just had to do it it was partly a historical, documentation for me, but it was also like, I'm a music fan, first of all, and I really love this music. And I was like, well, I hope people like it, you know? And as it's come out, people are coming to me now and they're like, I love this music. I love these songs. Who even knew about these artists? And I know, I'm like, thank you. And it's finally, it's like, I'm hoping that this record will get out there and we can form a community around our shared enthusiasm for this music. And now I'm not just alone with it, right?
Well, everything that was great about 70s music is found in this collection.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I encourage people to go check it out. And, you know, if you like what you're hearing, let me know. I'm out there.
Earl's Closet, The Lost Archive of Earl McGrath, 1970 to 1980. Joe Hagan, great to have you back on with us. Thanks for being with us today. And thanks for all your great work and bringing this music to a brand new audience.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it, Rich.
Joe Hagan with us on Downtown.